Hello, everyone. It's time to eat, drink, and be merry with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Eat, Drink, and Be Merry show with Nancy and Lisa, the publishers of Big Blend Magazines, which is a group of digital publications, including Eat, Drink, and Be Merry magazine. And every first Saturday, we welcome back travel writer Linda Kassam. You know, she's been on the show for years, and her nickname is Food, Wine, and Shopping Diva, because she is all about good taste. And every first Saturday when she's on the show, she usually brings some guests on to introduce us to some fine wines. Maybe it's chocolate. You never know, but she always knows what you need to taste or experience when it comes to a destination. So today we're going to be talking about Iris Vineyard Wines, and they're based out of Willamette, Southern Willamette area of Oregon. And of course, then you know they're making Pinot Noir, and it is fabulous, by the way. They also have a brand new tasting, well, it's a wine bar, not a tasting room. I'm going to get my hand slapped here, but it's a wine bar based out of Springfield, which is just outside Eugene, Oregon, in Southern Oregon. And that kind of connects to the history of the owners of Iris Vineyard. So I'm very excited to have Aaron Lieberman on the show, who is the winemaker, and also Carl Giovanti is a wine media specialist. But I encourage you to go to the website irisvineyards.com, because believe me, you're going to want to try the wines. So first thing, Diva Linda, welcome back. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. I'm sitting in a marina in Seattle, Washington, and you can see the big sailboat behind me. So that's our dock mate. So awesome. It's all good.
Wow.
And
beautiful
here. Yeah, well, we lived here half a year. So this is, we're living my husband's dream. Trust me, this is not my dream. My husband loves it, and so I'm trying to be a good partner, and there we are.
But you do bring wine on the boat, so that's important.
Yeah. So what I do generally each year is pick a winery or wineries to, and I spend a lot of time tasting wines and reviewing wines on the boat. I have to say, Iris Vineyards is a real showboat. You know, I don't bring every winery that I wines I've tasted. I don't generally bring everybody on the show, but this one is exceptional, especially because I thought they did such a wonderful job with their Pinot Gris and their Pinot Noir. Both are kind of interesting wines. I'm sure Aaron can tell us this. They have to make, but often a Pinot Gris is a flabby wine with a cruddy kind of color, and it tastes like water. So it's, but if you get it right, which Aaron did, it is a great wine. It goes so well with so many types of food, and including pad thai and so forth, which I love Asian cuisine. And their Pinot Noir was exceptional too. That's another one. You either get a good bottle of Pinot or a bad bottle of Pinot. So I thought, boy, they're sending me two bottles of wine that could go either way. And both were absolutely excellent. Just really wonderful. And
thank you, Linda.
And then we had, really, really good wines. And then the other one that I tasted was the Champagne Brut with sparkling. I think we have today sparkling brut. And oh my gosh, that was a winner as well. So all these wines can be tasted by both novice drinkers and aficionados, meaning that they aren't on the spectrum of wine tasting. They're sort of the taste is good for either one. You won't be blown out by twigs and wood, as my sister says, in the reds, and the white wines are not flabby. So
twigs and woods.
Good job. I'm proud to have you here, and we'll hear a lot more about this from you guys in a bit.
Yeah, it was exciting to have the wines here. We're right now in Maryland. The wines were waiting when we arrived here. And as everyone knows, we travel full time. And of course, we had to have a tasting party. We all sat around. We started with the Pinot Gris. Mm-hmm. And all three of us, four of us and the dogs. Mm-hmm. No, they didn't get to have wine. They're not allowed, but they wanted to. We all just sat there going, wow, this is amazing. And then it was gone. And then we almost like really cried. And then we said, okay, we can have the Pinot Noir at, you know, with dinner time, which was spicy pizza. So that actually kind of paired up nicely. Believe it or not, it was good. Mm. And of course, then we like shed a tear when the Pinot was gone because it was really good. And like all of us just were like, well, this is just really, really good wine. And then before our friends flew off to Scotland, we opened the bubbly because we had to toast new friendship. We had to toast that they're going to Scotland and they haven't been home for 5 years to see their family and friends. So it was a toasting occasion. We also, and they almost missed their Uber over this, I'm just saying. So we went around the room saying, okay, what do you think if you put everything into like one word? First word out was bliss. Then we talked a little bit more.
Which I thought bliss,
and I just all of us can like and then we talked a little bit more about the structures of the wines and how it, you know, all that geeky stuff, and we just went, it's bliss, but at the same time balanced, like especially when you think about the Pinot Gris and how it just was this delightful balanced bliss. So well done, Aaron. How did you bring balanced bliss?
You put some bliss in the wine, Aaron. What happened there?
Well, that's, I don't have that on the shelf. It's it kind of comes together on its own. I think in reference to Linda's comment about how it's done, I think it's so important for consumers to understand geography and AVA and she was talking about with the Pinot Gris that could possibly come across as flabby or tasteless, really has mostly to do with where the fruit's grown. And the reason that ours is so bright and full of flavor is because of the cool vineyard site that we have in the Lorraine Valley, which is a part of Willamette Valley. Super important. That's the first number one thing in wine quality, in my mind, is the place where the fruit's grown.
Okay, so the place now, I know that you went from soil science to winemaking. Doesn't that also really play a big part as what's going on in the soil?
Absolutely. Soil is a part of place. So the French talk about terroir and the combination of microclimate and soil and varietal rootstock and clone of the grape that's planted. So you really, you have to match your varietal to your microclimate.
That's really important. Having been a director of a wine region in California a couple of years back, we spend an awful lot of time in our educational classes, me just arranging it and then sitting in as the directors, but the winemakers and the growers and so forth really spend a lot of time trying to find the right clone and the right varietal for the place that you're at. Even though you might think that Pinot Gris would be a great seller and you like it personally and so forth, you know what, if it's too hot or it's too cold even, it just, it doesn't work. You have to go and figure out what works for where you're at. That's a really, really strong point and a concern for winemakers, I know.
Good point.
Tell us a little bit about the start of Iris Vineyards and the wines, how this all started, because, you know, reading the history of the family, it's, they're all in. It's they understand tourism as well as wine. So it, I think, is that play part of it, Aaron, in that creating wines, it has to be like a welcoming thing for people coming to a region and understanding a region. It's kind of like, like you were saying, the sense of place, right? So you're putting sense of place in a bottle, but for people traveling, and then now that you have the wine bar, which is great too, that people can go in and not only taste the wine, but also apparently these crafted wine cocktails, wine-based cocktails, that's really exciting. But it seems that they've always had this vision of really encompassing the region.
Yeah, so the owners, Richard Boyles and Pamela Fry, are from Eugene. They both went to the University of Oregon, which I believe is where they met. And after university, they spent some time in Europe. Richard had a job there that took him to Europe. And when they returned from that time, they came right back to Eugene. And they really, while in Europe, got very excited about the idea of growing wine grapes and eventually making wine. So they bought this property that the vineyard is on now in 1994. They began planting in 1996. And those vines are still in the vineyard. Actually, the vast majority of the vineyard is that 1996 planting. So the site we're in, it's a very high elevation for Willamette Valley. So we're between about 850 and 1100 feet. So your typical vineyard in Willamette Valley is more like 300 to 800 feet. So we're quite a cool site. And that really, as I was saying earlier, contributes to that really bright, fresh Pinot Gris that we get from there.
And I know that you're available in a lot of states across the country, at least about half of them, right? And
that's right.
Of course, Oregon, and you can order online and also in some restaurants and wine bars and wine shops. But I think that's the thing about going back to the sense of place is that if you're sitting in, you know, where we are in Maryland, right? And or you're sitting in Arizona and you automatically think Willamette and Pinot Noir, right? That's the first thing people think of. So you're ordering wanting that sense of place. It's like you want to taste the place. So it's kind of an interesting thing thinking about it going across the area and or across the country. There's that expectation. What's it like to do something outside of Pinot Noir? That's what I always think when people get stuck on one thing in an area. And then here it is, we've got Pinot Gris, because you wonder, okay, how's that going to be if they're so, you know, good at Pinot Noir, what's going to happen? And it was amazing. And the brood was amazing. So is that a bit of a knowledge, like an educational thing? You know, Linda was talking about education before, but isn't it educational for the winery and especially having the wine bar to kind of explain the different kind of grapes and wines that are made in that region?
And you know what is really, you know what I think is really nice as well? Let me just interject. If you're sort of wondering, are these going to be pricey wines? They are not. They are what we call the sweet spot. And I'll let Carl to give us the prices of wine if he'd like, or approximate prices, depending on where you buy it and where you are and stuff. But especially these three wines that we're talking about today are affordable. And you ought to really look into buying a couple and taking it home and enjoying it. Carl, what are the prices?
Oh, yeah, this is a good point, and it speaks to what Lisa was discussing. the availability of the wines in the United States. There's about 25 different states where Iris Vineyards is distributed. And the wines that you folks have tasted are, we call the core wines or the market wines that are widely available. The Pinot Gris is only priced at about $17. Finding any Willamette Valley wines under $20 is kind of a hard get, but this is an exceptional wine. I won't get into all the awards because I don't want to toot Aaron's horn too much. He already has a very big head. No, just kidding, Aaron.
You just make me blush.
That's right. I don't want you to blush over there. That's right. We don't want that. The Pinot Noir, I have other clients that their Pinots range from $50 to $90. The Pinot Noir you tasted is around $24, $25 price point. So they're making the wines very affordable. They're building a big audience. That's the reason we're on the show. And there's a good chance if in half those states, you can probably find Irish Vineyard wines.
That's what I was saying, because I think as soon as you think of Willamette, you have this perception of this is exactly how it's going to taste and be, and then you want people to kind of explore the other options, but also, yeah, you're definitely affordable. So that's kind of, you know, gets people to try something that maybe they haven't tried before and understand how much more the Willamette Valley actually does produce. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I would just say, Lisa mentioned our website earlier, irisvineyards.com, and we do have a list of distributors on our website. So you can find out if wine is distributed in your state or not.
Oh, cool. Cool.
That's good.
So people can get more than the Pinot Noir. They can get the, because we want the bubblies everywhere.
Yeah. not every distributor carries our bubblies, but almost all of them carry the Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris.
Okay, good. Okay. Good. Now this is amazing. So were people able to go to the vineyard before? How did they get your wine in Oregon? Or is the wine bar like an addition?
We have a distributor in Oregon. And we, before COVID happened, we had a tasting room open at the vineyard.
Okay, so now you have the wine bar in a very accessible area because you're right off the interstate, right? So that's right.
Yeah, very close. Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, so there's the experience there. You can get it online, which is great, okay? But one thing also when I think about the value is how sustainable you are.
Mm-hmm.
In the vineyard, in the winemaking. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because as soon as you start hearing sustainability, you think the price is going to go up tenfold.
Yeah, so there's a number of different classifications for vineyard sustainability and certifications that you can get for the vineyard. We are not certified, so say biodynamic, organic, in Oregon, and Washington, we have live and salmon safe certifications, which are kind of quasi-organic certifications. We have, our vineyard manager, I should say, has chosen not to get certified because he likes to continue to have some things in his toolbox that would be ruled out by some of those certifications. Nonetheless, in 9 out of 10 years, we never use any agricultural chemicals or practices that would preclude us from having, say, salmon safe certification. So in terms of sustainability, I think that our vineyard manager care for the property and the dedication of ownership to having and maintaining sustainable practices is without question.
Mm. Well, it would be worth mentioning the reforestation project. This is an 800 acre estate. About 50 acres are planted roughly. And the owners made a big commitment, Aaron. Do you want to talk about the oak reforestation program? I think that's pretty important.
Yeah,
a significant part of the 850 acres had been logged when they purchased the property, right before they purchased it. So part of, or a big part of what they're doing there, in addition to the vineyard property, is restoration of the forest. So there's sections of the property that are conifer forest, primarily Douglas fir, and other sections of the property that are what we call oak savanna, and that's a used to be the dominant ecosystem in the Willamette Valley, is this oak savanna, and it's a special kind of oak. I know most of your listeners are probably familiar with American oak, which Quercus alba, and in Oregon we have a different oak that's it's more dense and it's more aromatic than Quercus alba. It's called Quercus garyana or Oregon white oak. So that's the tree that they're trying to encourage to come back on the property and grow like it did before settlement.
Does that affect the wine? Because, you know, we've done so many interviews on, like we were talking about sense of place, the taste of place. Mm-hmm. And from what we've talked about wine, even in tea lately, is if you keep the land as natural as possible, that you can taste it in the food or in whatever you're creating. Do you think that attributes to the wine being so good and really giving that taste of place by, you know, looking at nature and being surrounded. I mean, of course, not as many pesticides or anything like that, but actually having that natural surrounding kind of, does that happen?
I think that's entirely possible. You know, the ecosystem anywhere is so intertwined. You know, you can't separate your vineyard from the land that surrounds it in any demonstrable way. I once tasted a wine at a show, and it was a California wine, and the wine had this taste in the background of eucalyptus.
Guess what?
The winemaker was standing at the table, and I said, "So the vineyard these grapes come from, is it just to the east of a eucalyptus break?" Because that's pretty common in that part of California, is these eucalyptus windbreaks. And so the sap from the eucalyptus trees was blowing onto the grapes, and it came in the wine. It was really interesting and kind of funny.
That's really cool. That's cool because I think that is the sense of place, taste of place is so important when you're purchasing wine, that you do have that. And so it, obviously it all goes with it. And as you know, I was going to say as drinkers, that sounds really bad. As wine enthusiasts, we want to know that, you know, what, that we're not destroying things to enjoy the wine. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's should be an uplifting experience. And I think that's something that, you know, reading through everything about Iris Vineyards, it just seems that you guys are on the path to protecting the wines or the land for the making wine, and also looking at what we get as, you know, the enthusiast who's tasting and going, ooh, yay, I can do this, I can enjoy it. Do you have like a wine club or anything like that that people can be part of on a monthly basis?
Yes, we do. It's called Trellis Club, and that can be looked at on our website as well. You can join the club online if you like.
So what about for out of state members, Aaron? Is there a program?
There is. We ship once a quarter, and we'll ship anywhere in the country that it's allowed, of course. So that would definitely be something you'd want to look at when joining the club, whether your state allows shipment of wine from out of state.
Now, the other thing too, I've got to go get that fancy word that I love this, kind of like a mission and philosophy of, and you also have wines that are named after this. Let me go. Is it Arete? Am I saying
very
this
good.
Correctly?
Wow.
That's right. Yeah,
thank you for putting it in the media kit.
tell
us about the
The legend goes that the owner, one of the owners, Richard Boyles, who went to University of Eugene, and Aaron, help me out here if I conflate any of my background information. He was a big fan of Greek mythology, and of course, he ended up reading the Iliad. And there's a concept about, you know, being the best person you can be, fulfilling your, you know, your full capacity, your capability, and it's called Arete. And it became a bit of a beyond a mission statement. It really became, you know, sort of a mantra, if you will, for the winery and winery practices. And, you know, Aaron should jump in here and let me know if I got that right, first of all. But
absolutely correct.
But certainly how you fulfill that in, you know, your production and with your staff and so forth.
Yeah. So the short story on that is it's always looking forward to how one can improve oneself and improve what one does in their life. And so we apply that to our production of grapes and wine at Iris Vineyards. And you'll see on our labels, we have an image of an eyeball, and that is also part of Arete. So the eye signals constantly looking forward to what one can do to get better.
Nice, I like that.
That was really, it was so funny because the ladies we were tasting with, our friends, they were, one is like, have you looked at the label? This is exactly how I look at wine. Do you purchase wine by this? I'm like, yeah. She's like, but look how the gray is. And she got into the whole label. And then mm-hmm. I walked up to her. I said, but did you see the eye? Yeah. She goes, it's Horace. Right.
Now, Lisa, I thought you were going to say, well, what about the iris? Is that related to the eye? Iris.
I know, I was thinking that, but she went to the Horace. She went to Horace. So that's what she went to.
Is it? Okay.
It isn't, Ern?
It is. It's a bit of a double entendre. So originally the name Iris came from the property because I mentioned how it had been logged prior to the owners purchasing it. One of the things that we see in the Willamette Valley, in particular after a logging event, is that these wild irises are called the Douglas iris.
Oh.
They're associated with Douglas fir trees. And so after the property is cut, then you get this huge bloom over the next 2, 3, 4 years of these Douglas irises. And so when the owners initially looked at the property to buy it, the hill, the one that's actually behind you on your background, was covered in these beautiful purple Douglas. Wow. Irises.
Well, wow. You see, that's how nature steps in to try to restore balance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's right. So that's a really cool thing. I like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I love the iris. Mm-hmm. We've seen wild iris out in Oregon.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, really. So this is the perfect thing for a champagne brunch, is have iris, cut iris. You've got your bubbly, you've got your yeast pancakes, and we have the recipe for the yeast pancakes for everyone on blendradioandtv.com. And everyone, Linda's article is there with her tasting notes, which includes corn dogs.
I would live to see the diva talk about corn dogs with wine.
They're good corn dogs,
I'm sure they are.
Corn dogs and champagne. Oh, they really are. I mean, I know it's a stretch, but if you're ever going to somebody's house and they're going to serve champagne and you want to bring a dish, try corn dogs. They're all going to look at you like you're nuts. But every time I bring it to my wine tastings, for my wine council, it's the first thing to go. Everybody loves it. It's just
It's really not that much of a stretch, and Linda. And when you think of the saltiness of the dog, and you think of corn chips go really well for some reason. Popcorn goes really well with sparkling wine. It does. It's a classic.
Well, this brings me to go ahead.
Okay. I always say, when people ask me about food pairings, when in doubt, serve sparkling wine.
Yeah.
It goes with almost anything.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. With the wine bar.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think it also is, as long as it's not, let me rephrase this. It can be for everybody's taste. So if you have somebody that doesn't drink a lot of wine or says, I don't like wine or whatever, and those that drink wine all the time, I think champagne meets in the middle. And it's just, especially if you've been a soda drinker your whole life and you like the effervescence part of it, but your particular brut champagne had a nice citrus taste to it. Great aromas, really a beautiful, beautiful wine. And how much is Carl? That was 30, I think, in the 30.
No, it was that's a little more.
$29.99 is RSRP.
For the Irish brew.
That's not bad at all.
That's a deal.
I want that for our Champagne Sunday show. It just was it was like, that's when we talked Bliss came out. You know, it's like, it's so bubbly, but it's not overdone. It's like the perfect size bubble. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm always fascinated about, the bubble size. You know, just like they're different. Well, no, Prosecco and Cava, like they seem to be bigger bubbles to me.
That's correct.
And almost oily. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets to, the champagnes and the bruts, like I felt like I was drinking, well, you do the actual method, the champenois. Am I saying that right?
That's right.
Oh my God, I need some more wine. No. Do I get another bottle for that? No, but I think it's because of the traditional method that you're doing that your bubbles are spot on. I've never thought I'd say
that. That sounds so funny.
Nice bubbles, Aaron.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great bubbles. Yeah,
that's correct. There are a number of considerations that go into getting those fine bubbles. I can go into those details if you like, but the most important part of that, overarching part of that, is the fact that it's traditional method or method.
Okay, thank you for saying that.
I would add, let me add from a layman's standpoint, I just took my second level WSET exam, so now I know a thing or two, but which makes you dangerous. With the traditional method, the carbon dioxide is actually dissolved in the bottle. And so you have these very sort of fine bubbles that we love. In a tank method, which is under pressure, you get very big bubbles. It doesn't dissolve in the same fashion, or it doesn't dissolve as, it's not as integrated perhaps. So there's two different methods. Prosecco would be the tank method with the big bubbles, Méthode Champenois, which is what Aaron does. And we should maybe talk a little about that, because champagne or sparkling wine, I should say, in Willamette Valley has become a very large category. I now am guessing at least 200 producers are making some type of sparkling wine. We weren't known for that. We were known for Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, and now sparkling wine is really coming on strong. Mm-hmm. And most of the producers have access to co-op facilities where they make their sparkling wine with other producers, which is very convenient. It's very affordable, cost-effective. Iris Vineyards and Aaron have chosen to do it in-house, which is very unusual for their small production. And if it's okay, Lisa and Nancy, maybe Aaron can just share a bit about why they've chosen to do it in-house and, you know, what the benefit is, because it's a very complex process. And,
yeah, I was going to say, it's like intense work too. It's like you have to be turning the bottles and doing all that.
Yeah.
Right. Yep, it is. Just to flesh out a little bit what Carl said, the number one sparkling producer in Oregon is Argyle, and they make about 40,000 cases a year of sparkling. And the number one custom producer is Radiant Sparkling Company, or Radiant Wine Company, I believe actually it's called. And they have about 45 clients, and they also produce about 40,000 cases a year, all told, between those 45 clients. Do it all in-house. We're just under 1,000 cases a year right now. We'd like to make that quite a bit bigger over the next few years. So please drink our sparkling wine. That will help. traditional traditional
method.com.
and get your corn dogs.
So what traditional method means is you make what we call the base wine, making any other white wine. We happen to ferment our base wine in neutral barrels. So that helps in terms of mouthfeel and pickup of protein, dissolved protein in the wine, which helps stabilization of the bubbles and the mousse in the wine. And then once that base wine is done fermenting, we age it for a little bit on the lees. And so the lees are basically yeast bodies that, after they're done fermenting, they settle to the bottom of the barrel and they begin to release their cell contents into the wine. So this is, there's a lot of protein in those yeast. And so that really helps with the bubbles and contributes to the fullness of the wine on the palate. Second ferment in bottle. So we get this base wine ready to bottle. We add some sugar, which is food for the yeast. And then we add the yeast, and then we immediately bottle that wine while it's fermenting. and then it finishes the ferment in the bottles. And we have, again, more yeast in that bottle to help contribute the protein and all that from the decomposing yeast into the wine. And the longer you leave it in the bottle before what we call scorging, where you remove the yeast, the more dissolving of the proteins you get into the wine and the finer the bubbles are. So we target about 15 months. We call it on tirage, so 15 months in bottle before we disgorge. So that's the
process.
The tank method, it's much quicker. They don't leave it in the tank that long. So there's less opportunity for the yeast to release their cell contents into the wine.
See, I love this. It's fascinating to me about the bubbles. I know people think I'm nuts. Like I always talk about, it's about the bubbles on this, but there is something, you know, I was just out filming in a wildlife refuge and they've got all these white wildflowers. Like, and I thought, oh, it's yarrow. Well, no, it was Queen Anne's lace. And you don't always see Queen Anne's lace. They look very similar, the flowers, but the Queen Anne's lace, the big difference is how fine it is. And that's kind of what I was thinking about when I was drinking the champagne of like, because the bubbles are, it's like a finer bubble. It's smaller on your tongue, on your mouthfeel, because it's a refined, there's nothing, you can't get it as more refined when you get too bubbly than champagne, right? Whereas
Yarrow
is still beautiful, but it's bigger bubbles, like the bigger petals of the flower to me, which is neat.
So I have a question. How did you always do sparkling wine, or did you do your still wines and then you brought in sparkling at a later point?
So brief little bit of history there. The Irish Vineyard started bottling wine under its own label in 2001. And from 01 to 07 vintages, the wines were made at custom crush facilities, so other wineries. And then the owners purchased the winery facility and remodeled it in 2007 and 2008, retired in July of 2008, and have been here since. So I did the 2008 vintage. And that was all still wine. So in 2015, I was able to convince ownership to allow me to start a sparkling program. So we started with a Brut Rosé in 2015 and 2016, we did a Blanc de Noir, 17 was Blanc de Blanc, and then 18, we started making all three.
So my comment here is when you drink champagne, you should understand that it's a very expensive and long process. It's a very long process for some of the wineries that there's holding costs actually, you know, there really is. And you have to be patient, and if something goes wrong, then you lose a whole vintage and so forth and so on. So, appreciate when you're drinking the method Champenoise method, just really appreciate it and understand that somebody has taken the time and effort, the equipment, and then, you know, after you bottle it, you have to, you know, do all this other stuff, and it just goes on and on and on. And when it finally comes to time for retail, it's a work of art. You're drinking a work of art. This particular that's one true. That I drank.
Yeah, was really, that's well said, Linda.
Yeah. So, you know, think just a little bit more about the wine you're drinking. Think a little bit more about the champagnes you're drinking. It holds a little bit longer, needs a lot more. Would you say, Aaron, that it needs a lot more help along the way? There's a lot more processes to it than still wine.
It does. It does need a lot of help. And just so your listeners know, depending on exactly how we do the sparkling wine, we touch each bottle of wine between 20 and 45 times.
Oh, wow.
Before that's it goes awesome. Into the case and out distribution.
Wow.
Right.
And that is why not every winery wants to make champagne or sparkling wines. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to look at the bottom line and say, you know, I'm going to have to hire this many people and they're going to have to work this many hours when I could just do a still wine. And that equates to a little bit better bottom line. So bravo to you guys. And you actually did a good job. So, and, you know,
right, thank you.
And I have a question. I have a question for Aaron. Aaron, do you still hand turn every bottle 4 times a day for 15 months? Do you still do that for 1,000 cases?
So that's the difference between the 20 and 45 times. So we have certain small lots. So we do what I call an extended tirage, where the wine ferments in the bottle and then it stays in the bin untouched for 26 months instead of 15, or at least 26 months, I should say. We don't, while it is aging, need to touch the bottles at all. They sit in our cellar and age, and we, you know, the yeast are allowed to do their thing in there. What Carl is referring to is called riddling, where you get the yeast to come off the side of the bottle. The bottles are stored on their side, so the yeast sits on the side of the bottle. And so we need to get that yeast from the side of the bottle down into the neck so we can remove it. And that's called riddling. And it can be done by hand or it can be done using a machine. Mm-hmm. We do have a machine, which is great.
A good thing.
it saves us 20 to 25 touches of the bottle. So thus saving a lot of labor. And so those, I'll go back to the extended tirage. Those are tiny lots, and we do hand riddle those. Oh. So there's your 45 touches.
Wow. This is what I was, you know, earlier talking about, where when people think about Oregon wines, Willamette wines, it's immediately Pinot Noir. And that's what I think was so great about tasting your wines, because it was opening the door to, there's so much more in Willamette. Of course, the flagship is Pinot Noir, and it's amazing Pinot Noir. But I think it's so special to see so much diversity in what you're doing. And I think that having a wine bar so close to Crater Lake and, you know, just Eugene and just off of the interstates, it's so easy to access in a beautiful region. It's going to open people's minds to how much you can do with wine in Oregon as a whole. And I was just wondering, is that with the wine bar, you're going to be doing a little bit more of the education, some tasting parties, and then I know you're doing craft, you know, wine cocktails, which is something unique. So it's kind of a hangout place because it's a bar, but a good way to introduce people to all the different varieties that people can experience in Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely. We make wines that are using grapes from Southern Oregon. So Rogue Valley, which is a much warmer area than Willamette. So we're not currently making Pinot Noir from Rogue, but we do make things like Malbec. We have a Bordeaux style blend. We have Viognier, Syrah. We do a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre blend. So these are all great varietals that require a warmer climate than Willamette.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah.
Everybody, Linda's article again is up on blendradioandtv.com. Also go to irisvineyards.com and also follow Diva Linda at allingoodtaste.info. So thank you all for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Lisa, Nancy, Linda. Much appreciated.
Nice to meet you all.
You too.
Cheers.